From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Washington Watch. Coming up on this Thursday edition, it is the eve of the annual March for Life, which not only marks the anniversary of the infamous 1973 Roe versus Wade decision, but it is an annual renewal of our resolve in the march toward bringing America back to a recognition that all life is sacred because it is made in the image of God. And while the pace of this march has sometimes been in question, trust me, we are not just marking time. We are gaining ground, and the evidence, well, it's all around us. In fact, our first guest is evidence of the gains that have been made. In just a moment, I'll be joined by the Vice President of the United States, my good friend Mike Pence. Then later in the program, we'll get an update from Senator James Lankford of Oklahoma on the U.S. Senate's efforts to advance a culture of life as they move forward on the no taxpayer funding for abortion bill. Also, Dr. David Curry of Open Doors USA is here with the 2019 World Watch List, which documents growing persecution of Christians worldwide. The number of Christians experiencing high levels of persecution jumped from 215 million to 245 million worldwide. What's behind the increase? We'll talk about it. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right, the March for Life is set for tomorrow here in our nation's capital. It marks the 46th anniversary of the infamous Roe v. Wade decision, which was handed down by the Supreme Court on January 22, 1973, a prime example, by the way, of judicial activism. But the march is also an occasion where we celebrate the inalienable right to life, which is evidenced in the policies and actions of the Trump administration. In fact, in 2017, just 1 week after the inauguration, Vice President Mike Pence made history when he spoke to the hundreds of thousands of Americans gathered at the march. And we're honored now to have the Vice President join us on the eve of the march. Mr. Vice President, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Tony Perkins, it is great to be back on Washington Watch, and thanks for bringing back some great memories. You know, actually, Karen and I, when our kids were very young, went to our first March for Life nearly 20 years ago. And you're so right. While most of the national media will ignore it, tomorrow on the National Mall, we'll have a throng of tens of thousands of people, especially young people, that are coming out to take a stand for life. And frankly, it was one of the most inspiring things I've ever been involved in, and particularly serving alongside President Trump, the most pro-life president in American history. We have much to celebrate, but we also have much work yet to do. But good to be with you.
Well, Mr. Vice President, you mentioned the president, Donald Trump, who his policies, the policies of this administration, have been a part of advancing that that culture of life. And as we, as I talked about this march to the restoration of the sanctity of life, we're making progress on that journey.
Well, we really are. And you know, your millions of listeners around the country in supporting this pro-life president and also supporting, you know, pro-life majorities in the House and Senate over the past 2 years, it's made it possible for us to make sure no foreign aid dollars go to any organization that, that supports or promotes abortion, the so-called Mexico City policy. I was able to cast the tie-breaking vote in the Senate to allow states to defund the largest abortion provider in America, in Planned Parenthood.
By the way, I think, Mr. Vice President, you were, I think, the first to carry that bill floor when you were in the House of Representatives.
Well, thanks for remembering. You know, my as you know, I'm pro-life. I don't apologize for it. We've taken a strong stand for life throughout our public career, and will, and frankly, will to our dying day. But for me, a decade ago, I authored the first legislation to defund Planned Parenthood, and while we're not there yet, we are absolutely determined to continue to cut off all funding. The largest abortion provider in America should not be the largest recipient of federal funding under Title X. We've made progress along that way. States can now defund Planned Parenthood, but we're going to stay in the fight for life. And also, we're going to stay in the fight with, you know, you look at the men and women this president has been appointing to our federal courts at every level, principled conservatives who will interpret the Constitution as written. The legislative support that we've had, pro-life majorities in state houses around the country. I really believe in our lifetime, Tony, that we will see the sanctity of life restored to the center of American law. That's my hope, my prayer. Tomorrow on the National Mall, we'll be calling for that and celebrating the progress we've made.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins, joined by Vice President Mike Pence as we're talking about the March for Life that takes place here in Washington, D.C. Tomorrow. You know, the culture is a big part of restoring this sanctity of human life, this understanding of that this is an inalienable right. And we're making progress. The polling shows that, especially among young people of all places, millennials, not in track with the Democratic Party. But as you point out, Mr. Vice President, the courts have played a huge role in this. 46 years ago, they thought they were going to solve this issue by imposing this on the nation. But the American people continue to push back.
Well, they do. And I have to tell you that I believe with all of my heart, not just for the electoral victories of pro-life candidates and this pro-life president, but also just from what I see around the country, life is winning in America. And life is winning more hearts and minds of young people in America every single day. And, you know, I remember speaking at the March for Life years ago, and I said, you know, when you look at the fact that more and more young people are choosing to embrace the sanctity of life, I'm convinced that it's been a result of a movement. It's been a result of people speaking out in the public square. The result of crisis pregnancy centers and their deeply compassionate work, you know, loving young women with, who find themselves in a crisis pregnancy and loving their unborn child. But I also believe, and I said this, that I also think that in the quiet councils between mothers and daughters and grandmothers and granddaughters, the truth about abortion is being told. And young people are hearing that truth. They're choosing life. And I believe that's why we're seeing the steady progress that we're making. That whatever the national media, and I'll be honest with you, Tony, we know you'll be flipping around the channels tomorrow trying to find some coverage of the March for Life, and you won't find it on much of the mainstream press. But the fact that this movement is growing, support for the right to life is growing, is a testament to the heart and the compassion of the American people.
And I would add to that list of contributing factors is science. I mean, the science is proving what we've known, that that from the moment of conception, that this is a life. It's created, it's unique, and it is worthy to be protected under our laws. And that's proving that. When you can see a snapshot of a baby in the womb, and which is oftentimes the first picture on a refrigerator, we're making progress in science.
Tony, we really are. And in fact, I'm speaking at what's called the Rose Banquet on Friday night. And it's actually the theme this year is pro-life and pro-science. And I'm going to talk about just that, about the fact that the steady advance of science, ultrasound technology, people are seeing that this arbitrary decision written by Justice Blackmun long ago, the anniversary of which we will mark with this March for Life in Roe versus Wade, is not based in science. It's based in politics, but as science advances, as a greater understanding of the unborn advances, I think we'll see the cause of life advance as well.
Well, Mr. Vice President, I know we just got a couple more minutes with you because I know you've got a lot on your plate. You've been working with the president, his direction to try to resolve this current impasse over national security and government funding. Do we see a resolution in sight?
Well, the president has been providing leadership on the issue of illegal immigration since the campaign. I mean, this was an issue that he literally put back at the center of the national debate. As I sit here today, 2 years into this administration, we are literally facing, because Congress has not been willing to act, we're literally facing a security and humanitarian crisis on our southern border. I had a piece in USA Today yesterday that you might want to share with your listeners a link. People can find it easily online. 2,000 illegal immigrants attempt to come into our country every single day. We see, you know, we see this new caravan that has started heading north. Literally, we have a caravan attempt to cross our border illegally every day, and the largest percentage of them ever are now families and unaccompanied minors who are being exploited by human traffickers and the cartels who have them take the long and dangerous journey north. They're often exploited not only physically but financially. They have to give thousands of dollars of cash to make this journey to come into our country illegally. Add to that narcotics. President Trump is absolutely determined. We're going to stand firm until we get the funding to build a wall on the southern border where it's needed, and to support additional border personnel, additional technology. And all that's missing right now is the Democrats. I mean, your listeners deserve to know the president is standing. He and I have been, we canceled all of our Christmas vacation plans. We've been here for the last month every single day, and the Democrats refuse to negotiate until we reopen the government. And the president has just made it clear he's going to stand firm for border security. We want to end this partial government shutdown. The president signed a bill yesterday making sure that all federal employees will get 100% of their back pay. We have great compassion for federal employees that are impacted and their families. But we also have great compassion for 320 million Americans that are facing a crisis of illegal immigration. And we're going to stand firm. People are being, you know, not only the American people are losing without secure borders, but frankly, vulnerable families south of our border are being exploited by human traffickers. President Trump and I are determined to bring this to a resolution, solve the crisis, reopen the government, and make real progress for our country.
Well, and I think, I know for our listeners, they applaud the president's resolve on this issue of solving this humanitarian crisis on the border. Vice President, I know we got to go here, but your wife and our teacher has been the target of critics this week, along with the Christian school where she's teaching part-time, because that school believes the Bible. I mean, are you concerned about this effort to marginalize people of faith that's going on in our culture right now?
Well, you know, you and I have known each other a long time. And, you know, Karen and I have been in and around public life for almost two decades. And so, to be honest with you, we're used to the criticism. But the attacks on Christian education by the mainstream media have got to stop. I mean, we cherish the freedom of religion in this country. This administration stands foursquare for the freedom of religion of people of all faiths. And to see the mainstream media criticize my wife because she's choosing to return to the classroom of an elementary Christian school is wrong. Again, the attacks on Christian education must end.
Mr. Vice President, thank you so much for joining us. And as always, please convey our appreciation to the president for the resolution that you have shown in standing for that religious freedom. We're grateful for it.
Thank you, Tony. Great to be with you.
All right, folks, the Vice President of the United States, Mike Pence. When we come back, Dr. David Corey of Open Doors USA joins us. Don't go away. We're back with more after this.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. A little snafu there. We had to play part of Thursday's program, a major audio breakdown here in our Washington studio, but we're working on it, and we've always got a plan. All right, a lot to cover today in the program. The Supreme Court today put judicial activism on hold and allows the president to be commander-in-chief. The high court overturned a lower court order staying the Trump administration's restriction on transgenderism in the military. I'll get a reaction a little bit later in the program from retired Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin. Also, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals handed down a victory to the taxpayers of Texas at the end of last week. And in just a moment, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton is here with those details. And in addition to the high court's actions today on transgenderism in the military, the court also took other significant actions. FRC's Travis Weber will fill us in on all of that later here on Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you are on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. All right. At the end of last week, which coincided with the March for Life, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeals, a three-judge panel, issued a major victory to taxpayers in Texas by ruling that the state could, in fact, take money from Planned Parenthood. Because of the corruption, the allegations surrounding Planned Parenthood and the sale of baby body parts. Joining us now is Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton with the details. Attorney General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony, I appreciate you having me back.
Well, it's good to have you back. I mean, you seem to be out there getting stuff done. By the way, I guess I should point out that General Paxton filed 22 lawsuits against the Obama administration during a two-year stretch, of which six were heard in the U.S. Supreme Court. He obtained an injunction and other winning rulings in more than 75% of the cases he's brought against the federal government. So I know you've been busy on these issues. This is a major victory for taxpayers there in Texas.
It absolutely is. We defunded Parenthood to the tune of about $3.4 million, and it's obviously a big victory for taxpayers, given the fact that they were clearly we had video showing they clearly violated medical and ethical standards, and that because of that they should not be qualified to get Medicaid funds.
So, is this a final decision? What happens from here?
So the Fifth Circuit sent it back to Judge Sparks in Austin, who's a federal district judge, and basically said you applied the wrong standard. So he has a chance to issue another decision using the correct standard, which is arbitrary and capricious, and we'll see what he does. So we're actually hopeful that he'll get this right.
Now, we've seen other states that have tried to take similar actions to basically end this forced partnership between taxpayers and Planned Parenthood. And, of course, the administration making it easier, the last Congress, by repealing overturning some of the Obama-era rules. Do you see other states, if you're successful, other states following suit?
Absolutely. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all. And, ultimately, this may be one of those cases that the U.S. Supreme Court decides they want to take when it gets back up, back to the Fifth Circuit, depending on what Judge Sparks does at the district court level. So, yeah, it would not surprise me to see other states take their shot and then ultimately see the Supreme Court make a ruling on this.
I mean, I think it's becoming harder and harder for Planned Parenthood as the veil is pulled back and we see the type of activities they're involved in. But also, this decision pretty much coincides with their annual report that just came out that shows that they're flush with cash, number one, and that abortion is their business. That's their main business, increasing the number of abortions they performed this year.
Well, there's no doubt that that's true, Tony, and I don't even know if they really deny that part. What was shocking is that they would basically time these abortions, they would do these abortions so that they could secure fetal tissue for their own research without even disclosing the conflict of interest that they have. And obviously changing, modifying abortion procedures to obtain the right type of the tissue for their research. So clearly they were not only doing abortions, but they were doing it at the detriment of their supposed clients, which is, obviously pretty horrible.
The amount of evidence that has amassed against the actions of Planned Parenthood would seem to make this thing this case closed and shut. That it was beyond question. But this issue is so politically charged, and they have relied for so long in the courts that it really is hard to resolve this issue once and for all.
Look, you're correct about this because, we're relying on our own laws. We're relying on the Constitution. As you well know, judges can manipulate both statute and the Constitution and come up with decisions that you would have never seen any way that they could have come up with. So in this case, we think we've got all the evidence we need. And it's video evidence, not like it's something you can hide, with Planned Parenthood doing exactly what we said they did. And there's really no denying that. So we think we have a clear-cut case to disqualify them based on them not doing the right things to be qualified as a Medicaid provider.
So, General Paxton, what's the time frame here? How long before this is finally resolved, do you think?
It just depends. I mean, I don't know how long it'll take Judge Sparks to revisit this. You know how courts are. It's very difficult to figure out how long things are going to take. And then it's a question of whatever his ruling is. Do we have to appeal his ruling or does Planned Parenthood appeal his ruling? My guess is it goes back to the Fifth Circuit. And then ultimately, whatever decision they have, whether one side or the other appeals to the U.S. Supreme Court, I mean, we could still be talking, a relatively long time, over a year.
How many other states have similar cases in the pipeline?
I'm not sure. I don't know of any other cases that are in the pipeline, but it wouldn't surprise me if there are some. And obviously, if there are different rulings in different circuits, that increases the likelihood that our case would end up in front of the U.S. Supreme Court. And obviously, if we end up back up the Fifth Circuit and we get some type of decision we don't like or do like and it gets appealed, then we'll be paying attention to other circuits and what happened there.
Right. One final point, General Paxton, this does point to the impact of the courts and why it's so important that we have constitutionalists on the courts that are not activists, but rather simply abiding by the Constitution. Makes a big difference, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I could not agree more. It gives certainty to us as lawyers. It gives certainty to my constituents. And it's the way our founders viewed the way this should work.
General Paxton, congratulations on this next step toward victory, and thank you for your leadership.
Oh, thanks, Tony. It's a privilege to serve.
All right. Great to have you on the program. General Ken Paxton, to find out more, go to the website, tonyperkins.com. Don't
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy that inspire us from childhood, such as unicorns and the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being, from the Loch Ness Monster to big tax refunds. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. Since 1973, these abortion myths have grown a substantial foothold in developing a climate of fear, misinformation, and a culture of death in the United States. In FRC's new analysis, learn whether most Americans support abortion on demand, and if a fetus does in fact feel pain in the womb. Join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you with us on this Monday afternoon. Earlier today, the Supreme Court handed down some actions, one of which dealt with the president's prohibition against transgenderism in the military. Now, you'll recall this is one of those things that the commander-in-chief sets policy for the military. Well, Barack Obama, on his way out of office at the end of his term, essentially opened the door for transgenderism in the military. Now, this is in addition to repealing the Don't Ask, Don't Tell and forcing open homosexuality on the military. Well, the president, in looking at this, said this makes absolutely no sense. It's going to cost money that we don't have, that we don't need to spend. It affects readiness. It affects the military. Well, as we've seen with so many other issues, whether it was the president's travel ban, whether it was, let me just grab my list here. I mean, it's like everything this president did, the courts were there to stop him. And so these district courts, which is really unusual, this is highly unprecedented, where you would have a district court step in and stay the president's actions nationwide, whether it was, as I mentioned, whether it was the travel ban, refugee policy, the phase out of the Obama era, DACA, amnesty, the efforts to speed up deportations of Iraqis, stripping of federal grants from sanctuary cities. I mean, you name it. Well, today they appealed, the Trump administration appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court today issued a ruling that said that the policy could go in effect until it was properly adjudicated. Big win for the commander-in-chief. Joining me now with a reaction is Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, Executive Vice President here at the Family Research Council and a founding member of the Delta Force. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
I'm glad to be with you.
Your reactions to the court's decision today?
Well, I'm very delighted that the court made the decision they did, because the reality is, as the commander-in-chief, This is something that I think has always been within the purview of the commander-in-chief or the president of the United States. To be able to determine who serves in the military, to be able to determine what state of readiness our military is supposed to maintain collectively and as individuals. And Mr. Trump certainly has the authority to do it. The problem is that four lower courts with activist judges put a hold on it. And today the Supreme Court at least gave us a temporary reprieve on this.
So it basically put judicial activism on hold. It's not final because this will have to be properly adjudicated.
Yeah, I think that there's a expectation that it will eventually, the whole case will go to the Supreme Court and they'll make a ruling. But I mean, how can they make any other ruling other than what they did today? And so I think that this just reinforces the fact that Article 2 of the Constitution says that the Commander-in-Chief is the President of the United States, and he has the authority to do what he's done today.
I mean, this is unchecked. I mean, this is a threat to national security when you have the Commander-in-Chief making policies that are in the best interest of the military and its mission, but you have a district judge stepping in saying, oh, no, I know better as to how the military should operate.
Well, what they're doing is essentially putting themselves in the position to be the more powerful than the commander-in-chief with regards to our military. And look, at any point in our history, the question that had to be answered before the Congress or the commander-in-chief made decisions regarding our military was, does this enhance our readiness?
Right.
Does this allow us to perform our primary mission and do so effectively? And our primary mission is to win the nation's wars. And in this case, nobody has ever asked that question, let alone answered the question as to how this enhances our readiness. And Dianne Feinstein today talked about readiness and how our military does so much better when we're all allowed to serve as what we are and to do so proudly. And then we've got others that are saying, well, transgenders have served with valor. And I'm saying, tell me exactly where you're getting these this data from. Where are you getting these statistics from? Because, first of all, Ms. Feinstein, I respect what you do as a senator, but you don't know much about our military. You don't know what it takes for our military to be ready to defeat our enemies.
But there's no right to be able to serve in the
Never
military.
Been a right to be able to serve. In fact, 71% of the people in America today that are of age to be able to serve in our military, and that's probably from 18 to 31 or 32, 71% are rejected because they don't measure up. They have to, if they do come in, they come in on a waiver because of health issues, mental issues, drug issues, not high school graduates, or they've got a felony charge somewhere in their background. 71%.
All right, General Boykin, we'll continue to watch this as it goes back to the lower court, and we see how it ends up. But I think you're right. I think five justices in the Supreme Court sent a pretty clear signal today.
I think so.
All right, thanks, General Boykin.
Yep.
All right, folks, don't go away. We're going to take a look at some of the other actions from the Supreme Court today. Some big cases coming your way as it pertains to religious freedom. Travis Weber is here next. Don't go away. More Washington Watch to come.
The world on our horizon isn't like the days I knew. Gone are the days of writing with fresh ink on thick paper and the swift crack of a letter opener. Homemade meals now replaced by fancy robots trying to figure out how often I buy organic goji berries. I don't even know what a goji berry is. My church started offering free Wi-Fi and changed their name from First Baptist to Radiant Water Life something or other. They even started posting video sermons recorded on wood pallet backgrounds that sync directly to a Dropbox that I have yet to locate. Thankfully, there's a silver lining to all this newfangled technology. Family Research Council's Stand Firm app. Put down your quill and contact your legislators directly from your smartphone or tablet. Share legislative alerts with your contacts and connect with like-minded Christians about the latest current events. Read the Washington Update and listen to Washington Watch with Tony Perkins. This thing's got it all, buddy boy. Keep your cool and help secure our future at frc.org/app.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. This daily update from Family Research Council is our flagship publication, an update with the latest pro-family take on Washington's hottest issues. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. Are evangelicals showing up at the polls? Are faith-based adoption providers persecuting same-sex couples? The left and the media love to answer these questions for you. Let FRC remove the spin and give you real answers with the Washington Update. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to other free resources, go to frc.org/connect. That's frc.org/connect.
Myth and folklore have influenced our civilization for centuries. Some of these myths can be wondrous tales of fantasy, from unicorns to the ever-beloved elf on a shelf. Others, however, can be detrimental to our well-being. Today, the myths surrounding abortion have become part of such vexations that plague our society. In FRC's analysis, 10 Myths on Abortion, join us as we debunk these myths and find the truth to secure a future for the culture of life. Visit frc.org/myths.
Your email inbox is probably filled with a lot of free stuff these days. Free is good, but most of our email ends up being free spam. If you want a healthier diet in your inbox, add Tony Perkins' Washington Update newsletter to your email menu. The update goes beyond the headlines and examines what is really going on in our culture and politics from a biblical perspective. To subscribe to this free daily newsletter and to subscribe to our other free resources, go to frc.org/connect.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. So glad to have you along on this Monday afternoon. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at T Perkins. All right, if you were listening earlier, we had a little malfunction, technical malfunction. Still trying to figure out what's happening. So we're kind of on our fallback plan here. It's the orange juice cans and the string. But we're broadcasting. Who knows? If I were given to conspiracy theories, I would think it was Chuck Schumer zeroing in on us, trying to take down our broadcast. But I'm not given to conspiracy theories. So we're going forward. By the way, we were going to talk with Louis Gohmert at the beginning of the program on the latest on the standoff on the government shutdown, border security. I was actually on the Hill earlier today, met with the Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell. And they will be moving forward later this week on Thursday with a measure that is in line with what the president proposed over the weekend. Now, right now, it does not look like there's much Democratic support. They're going to have to get 60 votes to move that thing forward, to get the government reopened, to provide for the border security. So be praying that some folks move along, and you might want to give your senators a call and encourage them to be supportive of this compromise. The president has truly put on the table a compromise package. It's not, and I know some conservatives are upset because it extends a Obama-era policy, the deferred action for unaccompanied children, and that has some upset. And I understand that, but this is how you get things done, and it's just a temporary continuation. I think it's fair enough, but you have Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi outright rejecting it. There needs to be a break among some of these Democratic senators to say, all right, this is reasonable. Not getting everything I want, but nor is the president. So anyway, we'll keep you posted on that in the next couple of days as that shapes up, but it's, let me leave it at this. We need to be praying for wisdom for our leaders and solutions that will move our nation forward. Okay, I want to get back to the Supreme Court. This morning we were discussing with the general here just a few moments ago, one of the big decisions, the Supreme Court overturning a lower court stay order. Now, it doesn't affect the actual case other than a district court judge had put a stay on the president's policy as it pertains to transgenderism in the military. The Supreme Court said, no, you've overreached. And I'm just adding words here. The effect was, they said, no, the policy goes into effect until this is properly adjudicated. That was big. But there was more that the court handed down. And here to talk about it with us is our own Travis Weber, Vice President of Policy here at the Family Research Council. He holds a JD from Regent University School of Law. Also graduated in international law with distinction and a certificate in international human rights law from Georgetown University Law Center. Travis, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony.
Okay, a big potential step forward on religious freedom today.
Yeah, I mean, there were a number of actions from the court that were significant today, perhaps not making headlines, but significant for religious freedom. One, the court is going to allow the acting solicitor general to argue at oral argument in the American Legion Peace Cross case. Now, this happens from time to time when the government wants to participate in the case, but it's significant because the DOJ, the solicitor general here under the Trump administration, is arguing for a proper originalist understanding of the Establishment Clause in that case. And they're being quite aggressive in a good way about it, arguing that we need clarity in this area, asking the court to provide clarity in this case in which the court is going to rule what standard to apply to a large memorial that's shaped like a cross under the Establishment Clause. I mean, we know that these things were permitted by the founders and the framers of our Constitution. And so it's really good to see here the Trump administration arguing for such matters as originalists.
So just so everybody understands, this was a case, the Bladensburg Cross case, the American Legion was filing suit, or the atheists filed suit against them. They were defending this, but now you've got the Trump administration saying, wait a minute, we'd like to get in on this.
We'd like to get in on it. And they filed an amicus brief, and so they're not a party to the case, but they're participating as amici, as a friend of the court. And they're offered a privileged position in these types of cases. We saw it under the Obama administration, too, with the negative results. But that's the role that DOJ has.
So but they don't have to do that.
They don't have to do it. So it
shows an aggressive, as you said, an aggressive nature in wanting to defend religious freedom.
It does. Now, they get involved in a number of cases, but they didn't have to pick this one. It's significant that they're being aggressive on this issue, too, asking the court not only to rule for this cross, but to say, to define what the standard is and clarify that it should be an originalist standard, not some loose standard that allows judges.
How significant is that?
Very significant, because we're not only going to see a ruling on this cross, we're going to see a ruling that affects other crosses, other public displays of religion, other monuments, Ten Commandments monuments, public plaques with religious figures on them, displays, possibly public prayer, all these types of things that you see battles over between people hostile to religion in the public square and those who want to support religion in the public square. All these are potentially going to be affected by this ruling.
So this could be the outcome of this case could be quite significant. I mean, going back potentially a half a century in terms of the impact that this case would have in setting precedent.
Very significant. When you look at the decades of negative Establishment Clause rulings going back to at least the 70s, probably further, you have rulings that have added confusion to the mix. So if the court clarifies this here, it's going to be very significant. This is why we filed an amicus brief here at FRC in the case, arguing that religion has a proper role in the public square, not only for the military, but for all of us as citizens in a free America going back to our founding. It has a proper role in society. I mean, we see this in so many ways day to day here. I mean, just with these attacks on Karen Pence is another manifestation of the hostility to this. But this cross case is very significant. So good to see the court make this determination.
And obviously you can't predetermine these things. But when you look at where the current Supreme Court is, the justices on the Supreme Court, where they are on many of these issues, it would look very promising for religious freedom.
I think we're going to get a good result in this case. The question is how big and exactly
how extensive
the result's going to be and what it's going to cover, but we'll get a favorable result.
Because oftentimes we've seen under the Roberts Court that the rulings are very narrow. as opposed to widespread in their application.
Yes, you know, so we're really hoping to get a very strong pro religious liberty result,
which is what the government is asking for.
Exactly. And this, Tony, this gets to one of the other developments today, which is this decision in the Coach Kennedy case. Now, the court, we know the Coach Kennedy case well. This is a
give our listeners a little bit of background on the Coach Kennedy.
Yeah, so this is a high school football coach and a Christian who had the practice of praying after the games on the field.
Marine veteran.
He was just personally praying, right? Drew hostility from some, resulted in the school taking action against him, telling him to stop it. He was fired. Now, he sued, and this case has wound its way through the courts. The Ninth Circuit has offered a twisted and erroneous logic in terms of preventing him from doing this, arguing because he's a public employee, he can't do it. And there are standards on that, but they clearly overreached. This was pointed out by four justices on the court today, because the court didn't take this up because there needed to be some resolution of fact questions at the lower court. So they said, we can't take it now. But you had Justices Alito, Kavanaugh, Roberts, and Gorsuch saying separately, we agree, we can't take this up now, but there are religious liberty problems in the lower courts, and they didn't have to offer this statement. So it's significant to see them, and it's important to see Kavanaugh joining them, saying we have real problems here with our public employee doctrines being applied in a way that limit their speech and religious practice. And this is important because we see this in other areas where people in public life are attacked and the courts ruling against them. So if you have four justices ruling this way, I think we probably have more, even though these four articulated this view. It's good for the future of this case, and it'll be an important one to watch.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. The website, tonyperkins.com. My guest in this final segment, which we had planned to take your calls, but as I said, we had a little technical issue. Not a little. It was a quite significant technical issue. And so we're trying to catch up with all the content I wanted to bring you today. A lot happening here in Washington, D.C., and as we've been talking about with the Supreme Court handing down some decisions today, not necessarily judicial decisions, but actions that will affect the outcome of several issues. Travis, what else did we see from the court today?
Well, those were the big actions we saw. This decision and this step taken by the court in Coach Kennedy's case, the Solicitor General being able to argue in the Bladensburg case, and as we discussed, the stays in the transgender military policy case. So three big steps. These are all, you know, procedural actions. They're not issued decisions, as you mentioned, but they're significant because they give us clues into how the court's thinking, what the court may do in the future, and how their cases may play out.
Now, in the transgender military transgender issue, the administration had asked the court to decide the issue. The court did not decide the merits of the case. They simply took the stay, or they allowed the policy to go into place while it's being adjudicated, but they're allowing the lower courts to handle the substance of the
that's correct. The because of the lower court's obstructionism in this whole situation, this whole case, as we've seen, lower court judges really overstepping their bounds. The DOJ in this case had asked for the stay, but they also asked for review immediately. So the court here granted the stay, and you know, DOJ was being pretty creative and doing a good job with handling the case, and that will allow, as it's supposed to be the case, it allows the executive to do the business of running the military and protecting security. So much goes on in the executive branch. There are reasons we don't allow the courts to get into these areas, but it'll allow them to do their work while the courts consider the case. And even when they consider it, there are doctrines whereby they defer to the executive on certain matters, including national security and the running of the military. But we'll have to see how that turns out.
Well, the administration had appealed to the court to take the case so that they could have the stability they need to go forward with this policy and not continue to be in limbo, because it is such a significant issue in terms of our national security. Having the military having a consistent, coherent policy that, you know, is not changing as the Obama administration attempted to do on the way out the door.
Yeah, and you need it. You need uniformity. You can't have, when you're running a nationwide, we have a policy that affects the whole nation. You can't have district judge here popping up with a ruling, someone over here with another ruling, perhaps different in their scope and how they approach the issue. It's just not the way it's supposed to work. Things can't be run that way. And there are good reasons that judges have been very cautious and stayed out of issuing nationwide injunctions, putting on hold executive branch policies, especially in areas they shouldn't be in. So this is very significant that this practice be everyone know about and understand what's going on.
When you look at the way our system works, when you look at you have the district court levels, federal court, I'm talking about federal courts, you have the district courts, you have the appellate courts, the circuit courts, and then you have the Supreme Court. And the idea is there, you've got a little area that's got the district court and their decisions govern that area. And if it's not a good decision, they can appeal to the circuit court. And then that has a bigger territory. And if that decision is flawed in some way, then you appeal to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court only hears maybe 2-3% of the cases on an annual basis, very, very few. This is based upon a really kind of a biblical pattern of even when you go back to Moses and how they had the lower judges, if you will, and they appealed their way up to him. It was a decentralization, and it didn't allow one person to really dictate the policies for everybody. There's protection in that. There's safety in that. But that's being undermined by the current level of judicial activism that we're seeing in this country.
I think you definitely have a desire to sort of use the courts as hammers over areas outside their jurisdiction. And you'll notice this when you have hot-button social issues decided, when the marriage cases came about. You know, if a marriage case went the way the liberal activists wanted it to go, they would seize upon that and trumpet it as though it was game over, as though that was the law of the land. It's not the law of the land. Each courts have areas of authority, and you look at the area of authority and exactly what the ruling said. And we saw this issue come up, especially when the marriage cases were coming up through the courts. But as you said, it's significant because you don't necessarily in many instances, there are reasons that judges are going to look at issues before them and decide them in accord with their geographical area of jurisdiction for all sorts of reasons that don't necessarily produce a body of results that accord with every other area. And there are reasons those differences are allowed to kind of play out before the Supreme Court steps in and says, we need clarity in this area, and we're going to bring it. But you don't necessarily need that in everything right off the bat. And you certainly don't need people holding a lower court decision over everyone's heads as though it's settled law. It's not settled law. It decides the issue before the court, and that's it.
But this breach of boundaries really threatens our entire system.
It does. And the idea that the courts somehow have the final say in what the Constitution means is part of the problem. Yes, the courts, Article 3, we all know there's a reason to have an independent federal judiciary as set up by Article 3. But Article 2 and Article 1 matter too. And those give specific areas of constitutional authority to the executive and legislative branches, respectively. And there are areas even there the courts cannot go into and decide. There are reasons for a constitution.
All right, Travis Webb, we're going to have to leave it there for today. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
All right, folks, out of time. Thanks for joining us today. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6, where he says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, prepared, and taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.